This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits. Enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform, Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to an iFanboy special edition podcast, Luke Cage. I'm a good man. Welcome to the much-anticipated special edition podcast focusing on the Netflix series Luke Cage, produced by Marvel Entertainment Studios folk. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
You sure you don't mean Mike Romo? Or?
Oh my God, it's Josh.
It's just, all three of us are here to talk about a Netflix series, which I don't think has ever happened before, has it?
And I think I finished it first.
You did? Oh, you asked? Because what happened was, is that here's the arc, is that it came out, I started watching it, I made it about halfway through, and I said, hey, I'm about halfway through, and Connor says, I haven't even started, so I stopped. And then out of nowhere, Josh says, "I finished." And I said, "I didn't even know you started." So, and then here we are. And then finally, Connor finished, and now we're together. And we're going to be talking about the latest installment in the Marvel Netflix direct to Netflix series, Luke Cage. Connor, who's you got the cast and crew rundown. Who do we need to know about?
Well,
before we do that, spoiler warning: we're going to talk about what happens in the show. You've clearly watched it already, and you just want to know what we think about it. But in case you haven't, you might want to press pause, go spend 13 hours watching television, and then come back.
So this is the fourth season and the third series of this Netflix deal. We'll have Iron Fist next, and then followed by the Defenders All-Star Edition. We've had two seasons of Daredevil, we had Jessica Jones, and now we have Luke Cage. And yes, this series was created by Chio Hadare Coker. Ray Donovan, Almost Human, Southland. So he's got a pretty good TV career record as a producer. Right. 13 episodes. We first met Luke Cage back in Jessica Jones. He was a fairly prominent member of that series. One of our favorite things of that series, I think, Ron.
Oh, absolutely.
And I had, like, the whole time I was thinking that this took place before that, but later it turned out it didn't.
That's one of the things that when we talk about the criticisms of it, was that it was, at least for me, it was the when you start watching it, it was hazy on where it was in the timeline, because you're right. At first, I'm like, oh, does this take place before he bartended at a bar in Hell's Kitchen? But no, it's after. So if it's after, why doesn't he refer to the fact that he got blown up a couple of times and all?
Because first of all, it was literally exactly as it appeared in the timeline of all the other things. So
yeah,
they didn't. You just happened to wonder if it was something else,
right? Yeah,
and it's not like he really talked about himself all that much. So
did he own the bar, or was he the bartender?
He must have been the bartender, because
I thought of him as the owner.
I thought he owned the bar.
So did I. But he clearly just walked away from it to go sweep floors at a barbershop.
Well, he had to get out of the Hell's Kitchen because it was hot. It was hot there. So
he went, hot. It's too
he
hot.
Went 40 to 50 blocks north.
Much, much cooler north of 125th Street.
Mm-hmm. Mike Coulter, Luke Cage, and I think...
No, Connor.
Yeah.
The great Mike Coulter. Give him the respect. Yeah.
So this series was rocky. Well, I mean, let's just jump right in. I thought of all the series so far, this was... I don't want to say the worst, because I enjoyed watching it, but this was the least well done.
I disagree.
I think far and away it was the least well done. But however, I think this had one of the better casts of all this.
Agreed.
I thought they had some fantastic actors, some I'd heard of, some I'd never heard of. I think Mike Coulter's the most compelling lead they have.
Yep. By far. I was gonna say of all the main characters, he was easily the most compelling. And in a way, I really think that he happened to, I don't know that any other thing that this has happened with, he actually, I think, helped clear it up what they were trying to do with Luke Cage in the comics for me. Like, I think he did it so well that he made those comics work better for me in retrospect.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Well, he's got a whole, like, heroic but reluctant thing that I think Coulter played really well, but I don't think came across in the comics, but it was clearly being attempted. So when he was, like, in charge of the Avengers, you know, it was like somebody who's great had greatness thrust upon them, but they weren't really seeking it and they didn't really want it, but they knew that it was the thing they had to do. And I think that this encapsulated that better than, say, like Bendis did in those comics, if that makes sense.
He rides a really great line where he's tough. You have no doubt that he's tough, but you also have no doubt that he's good. You also have no doubt that he will do what he has to do.
Right.
He plays there's a lot of things going on with Luke Cage and Mike Coulter. I mean, he looks like a nice guy, but he will also throw a truck through a building if he has to.
Right.
And he has an innate goodness about him. I think that's the reason why everyone's drawn to him.
And he's immensely handsome.
And he's super handsome.
I mean, to give the full background to our listeners, the love affair with Mike Coulter began for me and Connor in his role as Lamont Bishop on The Good Wife.
Yes.
Where he was a handsome drug dealer.
That is such a comic book name. You say Lamont Bishop, and I'm like, oh, that's a thug from Hell's Kitchen.
Right, yeah. No, he was a very well-dressed kingpin, but he was fantastic in that. And what's interesting is that, like, those are really the only two things I've seen him in. I know he's been in other stuff, but those are the only two things I've seen him in. And just to see the subtlety of which he played both those roles it shows that he's the real deal. He's really good. And it makes me lament the division between Marvel Studios, yes, between movies and TV, because I would love to see him up on the big screen as Luke Cage next to Chris Evans. You'd like that? I think that, I think he could totally pull it off, because I think
that
he is solid.
Overwhelmingly throughout this series, yep, was that I was really annoyed that we would never see him in the Avengers, because
yep,
he's a great character, he's a great actor, he could no doubt hold his own in that group, and
yep,
it's just a bummer that there's that dumbass turf war in Marvel.
And which also, like, you know, and I try not to read other critics and all this sort of stuff to see, but seeing some of the, you know, I was poking around to see what people thought of it, and, you know, aside from the crazies over there, which I'm not going to acknowledge, you know, there were folks who said that he was a weak part of the show, and I was like, what are you talking about? Like, to be the main character and be the guy in the you know, on the cover page of Netflix when they show it's him, you know, it's like he's the lead character and he's got to do everything.
And he carried it. I mean,
he carried it like really well. Yeah. And you got the sense, like you said, Just, you got the sense of the reluctance. You got the sense of the responsibility. You got the sense of the he's a good man, you know, and you got the sense of him wanting to do the right thing, but also wanting to just not be bothered, because, like, just let me be me. I'm not a hero. He kept on saying that was a theme throughout the whole show, was him, you know, the reluctant hero until he finally embraces it towards the end.
I think it's tough to explain. It's not I don't want to be bothered. It's,
right.
It's almost like it's not my place.
Yeah.
But then somebody has to stand, right, you know.
And going back to what we were talking about with the timeline, and Connor, with your comment about it being the worst of the show so far.
Well, and I caveated that. Worst makes it sound bad. I just think it was the least well put together.
I interpret your comment by that by like a matter of inches, right? I just think that
structurally it was had the most problems. Like, it got really boring in the middle, and
that's a bigger issue. Well, before we get to that, what I was going to say was that, you know, the problem with where it took place and all stuff like that is that I feel like they introduced him in Jessica Jones, and they gave us a touch of a backstory with this Reva, with his dead wife, right?
Yeah.
And you got a sense of something. And I thought that they would build upon that in this series, but instead they gave us something completely different, which I don't really feel the tight connection to him and Jessica Jones as I had hoped for.
One of the things I didn't like about Luke Cage in this was that they took him away from being a Harlem native,
yeah,
and made him from Georgia. One of the things about Luke Cage, the thing in the comics that makes him so powerful, is he is the hero of Harlem, and he's a native son of Harlem. And this series was as much about this Marvel version of Harlem as than anything else.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, by the end of it, you know, like he
is, but just for me, like, the character, it's, you know, it just, I get that every character in Marvel came from New York and they're trying to make the change that, but, like, especially for Luke Cage and that neighborhood, it just felt like an odd choice to take away that origin for him. It wasn't a huge deal. I just, something that irked me slightly that didn't really take away from my enjoyment.
So which I think this is fair.
I think that, Connor, you are right in terms of quality or evenness or whatever, but I will just – this was my favorite of this year, of the shows.
I had a lot of fun watching it. When it worked, it really worked.
I didn't finish Daredevil season 2. Like, I just stopped caring.
Right. Well, I think that the issue with this series is the same issue with Daredevil season 1 and 2 and with Jessica Jones,
yes,
and what we've talked about a lot, which is – the manner of which they're telling these stories, 13 episodes is too long.
This one could have been 6.
We've said that about all of them. We've said that exact same line. This could have been 8 or 10 episodes. This could have been tighter. This could have been, you know, like, and there was just, you know, like, it just, when I would sit down and watch an episode and the runtime would be 1 hour and 5 minutes. And I'm like, well, why? Like, it doesn't, you know, like, there was so much breathing room and there was so much slowness and honestly repetitiveness. The show really breaks up into 2 story arcs.
Yeah.
And both story arcs, there are at least 2 episodes in there that could have been 1 episode where it's just the same thing happening over and over again.
So let's break it down. So Luke Cage is working in a barbershop, in Pop's barbershop, sweeping floors. He's also a dishwasher at a club in Harlem. Harlem's, what was it called? Harlem's Paradise?
Something like that. Harlem's Romance Harlem.
The club was run by Cottonmouth. Cornell Stokes is a crime boss. His cousin is a city councilwoman representing Harlem. And he gets caught up in Cottonmouth's dealings and takes him out halfway through the series. And then we switch over to Diamondback, who is his find out is his half-brother. And once Cottonmouth went away, I my level of caring went way down. I didn't think Diamondback was at all a compelling villain.
Well, and it was the kind of thing where it was the ascension of Cottonmouth's cousin, sister, you know, Mariah, played by Alfred Woodward, her ascension as the villain.
Yeah,
but
then Diamondback comes on and he's kind of way more over the top and silly. And first of all, I think Mahershala Ali, who plays Cottonmouth, who is probably gonna be nominated for Academy Award this year for Moonlight.
Yep.
Is an amazing actor, and every time he's on the screen, I couldn't look away. And once he went away, you lose this really strong piece of the cast. And nothing against Eric LaRae Harvey, who plays Diamondback, but it just wasn't as compelling to me as the Cottonmouth character.
I didn't like Cottonmouth that much. Like, I liked the performance, but I just thought, I don't know, there was something that didn't quite click with me. I felt like he wasn't. I don't know. I think he was playing the line, the sort of gray line, a little too closely. But I thought the same thing about Diamondback. Once he showed up, I was like, "What is it?" It got really cartoony.
Yeah.
Well, it's so
when
fun.
He
it's
did
so,
show so... up, when he did show up, that whole bit though with Alfre Woodard, I thought she got way more interesting when she crossed the line fully to the other side.
Getting pushed into the full-on crime, like up until that point, she could lie to herself and say she wasn't a criminal.
But I liked that part.
And then she had to cross the line, but I just felt like he was so cartoony. It was kind of like,
well, it's funny that you say that, because I agree with you completely. I thought Cottonmouth was fantastic. I thought he was great as a villain and set up, there, and you had this dichotomy between Mariah, who's trying to reform but renovate Harlem into to bring it into another golden age, and the public policy aspect of it, and meanwhile, while she's being funded by an underground crime, that sort of thing. That was really, really interesting. And I liked the way they seeded Diamondback through the first six episodes as this puppet master, this kind of a bigger problem. Talking about the villains, on the aside, the dude who played, even though the name was stupid, but the Shades guy,
Theo Rossi.
Fantastic.
I loved him.
Fantastic. He's great.
I can see how people wouldn't like him, but I liked him a lot.
He was He was the only actor or character from Sons of Anarchy who I didn't completely hate.
Yeah. So I thought he was great, but then they dispose of Cottonmouth, and I was annoyed at that. I was surprised. I was like, whatever. I'm like, all right, we'll see where it goes. Then they introduced Diamondback, and I love the actor who plays Diamondback. He was Josh. Do you remember him in Boardwalk Empire?
Oh, yep. Yeah.
Pernsley in Boardwalk Empire. He's fantastic. And then I was like, all right, cool. Now we're going to get at it. And then it just becomes, I'm secretly your half brother and I hate you because our dad liked you better. And I was like, oh, come on. Like, I wanted the big story play to be about Harlem, not about shitty revenge.
And also, you mentioned that they spent the whole first half talking about the shadowy figure in the background that Shades worked for.
Yep.
Diamondback, and I thought, oh, this is interesting. Maybe they're setting up the next season, or whoever this guy is, he's going to be a badass. And he shows up, you're just like, so it's this guy?
Yeah.
Like, he didn't really fulfill the mythos of this super scary crime boss that everyone would hear his name and get, hop to it. And it was just
kind of like, and that's the thing, is that the combination of his portrayal of just conversations with people, the way the actor just carried himself, and then you factor in which I thought was, everyone's all about the Easter eggs and all the crap, but I thought that was a nice little nod to have him have access to hammer technology, which is Sam Rockwell's character in Iron Man 2.
Yep.
So you had a little idea of a little more oomph behind it, right? In terms of weaponry, it just fell short because if he wants to control Harlem, then yes, you got it. But it's not just that, daddy liked you better. Like, that just, it was so disappointing.
I agree.
Yep.
I agree.
Well, also you had, the high bar for these things in terms of villains was, originally Vincent D'Onofrio, who was, I think, the best part of Daredevil. And then after that, David Tennant came along. And so this after that was like,
Yeah.
David Tennant, you mean Jessica?
Yeah. I mean, like, that he was like, if he wasn't in, you know, Jessica Jones, I don't, you know, I don't think I would have made it.
Yeah.
They, you know, they have the opposite thing here where we've said in the Marvel movies, the villain's usually the weakest point. But in these shows, they actually have done a really good job cultivating interesting villains. Or at least really great actors to play those interesting villains.
And I think that's a really good point because, D'Onofrio is great. Tennant has been great. You know, even Bernthal as Punisher was interesting. But then, you know, but this, like, I feel like there was a wealth of villains in this. And it just, and, you know, and you had so much, you know, you even had speaking of portrayals, the woman who plays Misty Knight, who I thought she was great.
Yeah, Simone Missick.
This was borderline a secretly, it could have been Luke and Misty, because that's how good she was, and that's how strong she was as a character, which I didn't expect. But I liked how they had, what's his name from Pulp Fiction as the dirty cop that worked with her?
Frank Wally.
Yeah, there was a wealth of danger up until it got comical right around the 8th or 9th episode when you find out really what's going on, which is just kind of sad.
Why did Diamondback wear that helmet?
That's the thing.
The comics.
I love that.
I was Googling pictures of Diamondback, and all I saw was him wearing the shirt, the ribbed shirt. Yeah. But I didn't see any pictures of him in a helmet, any drawings of him in a helmet.
I thought the helmet was great. I thought Diamondback's costume at the end was awesome because it was a nod to the comics, but it also made sense because it was the hammer technology and that made him strong. And like I thought all that weaving together was great. I like that.
All right, so let's talk about some of the things we really liked. You just mentioned Misty Knight was great, Shades. But for me, I would have been totally fine if the show had just been in Pop's Barbershop.
Yes, agreed.
We just hung out at Pop's, the old guys were playing chess, Pop's doled out wisdom.
The dude with the goatee, who was also in The Get Down, who was also in Mr. Robot, that guy is very quickly becoming one of my favorite character actors.
Ron Cephas Jones or something like that. He's in the Story of Us, too.
Yeah. Oh, he's fantastic.
This is Us.
This is Us. He's
the father and This is Us. He's great.
I know, but it, like, you can't tell it's the same guy. And that's why I was like, oh, he's really good.
Yeah. Yeah, and those first couple episodes where they just sort of hang out in Pops and... You know, Pops would dole out wisdom, and then there would be trouble, and Pops would talk him down, and then, you know, Luke would defer to. I just thought Pops was great. I thought the whole environment was great. And I was genuinely moved when Pops is killed. I was like, no, no, oh.
I thought they did that too soon, to be honest with you.
I did too, because I loved it so much. But then again, that's the point.
Well, no, it really had power, and it really, like, I was really bummed, but I know that that's what moved things forward, but it was one of those things where I, like with Cottonmouth, I was mad that it happened so quickly.
That's good, though. That means it worked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if it had actually happened too quickly, you wouldn't have cared.
Right.
So, I mean, I think just that point of the barbershop, of the – this show actually felt different than the other ones because it felt like it was actually in a different place coming from a different perspective than my own. Mm-hmm. You know, the obvious thing being it's a story about, you know, a black neighborhood and black characters by a black showrunner.
Yeah.
And those characters were given their point of view, and it did not feel like – you know, like white people writing it, I guess, if that
it felt
makes
very
sense.
Authentic,
which to me, which because even like some of it, I was like, oh, that's not really my sense of humor. And that's that's interesting. I mean, like it just made it more interesting than the other shows were to a certain extent, which were written by nerds. I know. You know what I mean? Not specifically, but just people like I know. So this felt like fresher to me in that instance. So are we talking about things we like? Because I can tell you the moment where I decided it was my favorite.
Let's hear it.
When Luke Cage met Method Man in the store.
Oh,
that was
the
best scene in the entire series.
That was the best
scene. That was
the
worst.
I was literally just
explaining that at dinner, and I was saying it was like bad 70s celebrity cameo.
No,
it was so cringy.
No, it was the best scene.
They both had mutual admiration for each other.
It was so cringy.
Hello style was my joint.
Yeah. That was really
it set up that Harlem is a sort of small town.
Yeah, and then they double down by having him do a full rap about him,
which
should
great.
Have been cheesy, but I loved it.
Yeah,
no, I would have been fine. I was fine with the radio bit and the rap. It was just that moment of you know, when like where it stopped, it put a halt to what was going on, and then he's all smiles and like then the you know the pillow was my jam, whatever, and then he's like. You know, and it goes back to the phone. I literally just rewatched it before the show, and I was like, "This is like it's bad 70s sitcom cameo."
That was the best scene in the entire series by far. I immediately texted you guys saying that it was.
Luke Cage is a bad 70s. Like that's where it comes from. Yeah. I mean, that's what this was. It was almost blaxploitation.
No, so but that's this. No, there's
this
a difference.
Modern blaxploitation.
There's a yeah. There's a no. I'm not saying scene. It was like blaxploitation. I'm saying it was like a goddamn episode of The Love Boat.
That's
what it seemed like. Not like blaxploitation at all, Josh.
No, but blaxploitation comes out of that same era, is what I'm saying. So, if I don't know, it didn't bother me in the least. I laughed because it instantly one of those things about Luke Cage, because he's so taciturn, he doesn't say anything.
Right.
But to have like his personality show up, like, oh, I really like your stuff. Like, and they were both like, and they were also saying like how they were both mutual admiration of each other. I thought it was great. It was, you know, it was fun for me.
It was the best scene. It felt the most natural. You actually got Luke dropped his guard for a second, and it showed that the neighborhood that they always talked about throughout the show, that Harlem was a small town that everyone knew each other and watched each other's backs, even if you were famous, it totally worked for me in that sense. I loved it. Okay. I thought it was fantastic. Fine. You were wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. once again, Rosario Dawson acts as if she is the greatest actor on the screen.
I don't know if she's good or bad because I love her.
Exactly.
And like every time she's in something and someone has to fall in love with her, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
Now that's
said, so. How do you go from this to does he actually end up with Jessica Jones now? Because
because that's the thing. The one thing that I did, because at any given point throughout these 13 in our time of knowing Luke Cage in these Marvel TV, you know, we know about him and Jessica Jones from the comics, so we expect that to be a thing. But then we know that he was married to this Reva woman who we got very little about, which is very disappointing in my mind. And then he hooks up with Misty. He, you know, has this several episodes of chemistry with Rosario Dawson's character, whose character name I don't even remember. Claire. Right, so it's just like wow. And like the thing is, he's very handsome, and so I'm not surprised. But it did
feel a little weird coming. If this was a prequel, it would have made sense. But coming off of his romance with Jessica, and it's not to say people don't stop one romance and start another one, but yeah. The fact that she wasn't ever even referenced, they just went through this entire thing. He tried to kill her when he was under the sway of the Purple Man. And, you know, you think it'd be fairly traumatic that he was involved with this woman and he almost murdered her. And it wasn't even... And I get they wanted this to be standing on its own as a Luke Cage series.
But they referenced it, too, in the series. I mean, one episode had Trish doing her radio show.
Worst part. That was the low point of the... The low point of the series, that radio show clip where the dialogue was terrible, the line readings were terrible... That was the worst.
So that they had that, and then there was a couple times where they referenced it, like, and then there was that crazy person who they referenced it, so it it happened, but to have him never acknowledge it, much less to Claire, who was in it.
But even that was you think he would be a little haunted by it. He's haunted by so much else in this series that the fact that he tries to try to kill someone he was involved with, not too long ago, if they're all still talking about those events, you think that would have affected him. I mean, again. I can see it. Fine, they want to make this a Luke Cage show. They don't want to have anyone else in it. But he was so involved in her story.
Yep.
And it was odd to me that she was never even referenced specifically by him in this whole ordeal. Because what happens now? He goes.
That was just one weekend for him. Right. I mean, that's the thing that happened once, like 5 years ago. It was a weird weekend, but.
Yeah. Listen, I don't like to talk about it. My weekend in Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
And so when they get so it'll be interesting when they get back together for Defenders or whatever happens.
And I fully expect Claire to show up in Iron Fist. And she's like the Netflix show's Coulson. Yeah, she's Coulson, right?
I'll take that every day.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but it was interesting because like the weaving in of the greater Marvel universe and how much is it going to tie into the other shows and the movies. You know, like if Claire says one more time, I know a good lawyer. Like that's right. Okay, we get it.
Call him for God's sakes.
Yeah, exactly. And then they're still referencing the incident, right? And then like all this, you know, the old references to the Avengers, which I understand that was a big deal and almost destroyed the city, so I'm sure that would have resonance. But then there were times where it does work, like I mentioned, like with the hammer technology and with the, you know, little throwaway comments about the, you know, about the villains in Daredevil, you know, with the Chinese have their own thing going on downtown, and right. You know, like
You know, so it's like it's an interesting balancing act, which I think that this time around was not as distracting and felt more immersive. And I think
it's also the most
with,
of them. I think they had the most. Yeah. I feel like this is the most times things were referenced in any of these shows.
There was a certain point where they were actually making so many references that they were like pop culture references and stuff that was knowing me at first. And then by the end, I was like, all right, that's what we're doing here. And it didn't bother me anymore. So, you know, that's by the time they did, you know, Luke Cage in the 70s look, you know. What do we think of that?
That reminds me. That was my thing. I thought the Luke Cage in the 70s look was fine because what that does is that gives the nerds what they want. It's a funny little moment and then move on, right? Like that was almost the perfect way to deal with it.
What
annoyed me was that we went about 8 episodes of everything being fine and normal, and then for some reason, from episode 8 until the end, he's going to say Sweet Christmas every 30 seconds.
And you know what? The time it felt the most natural and it worked the best with Method Man. That was the only time I thought Sweet Christmas felt like it actually made sense that he said Sweet Christmas.
You're right. You're right.
When he said it, I bought it.
But he said it a lot towards the end, right?
Oh, he did. He said it a lot.
You know what's interesting about that is every time he said it, I had to weigh whether it worked. And most of the time it didn't. I was like, I don't hear him saying it. And Connor's right. It was when he said it to Method Man, I was like, all right, he sold it there.
Yes, he did. It was the only time.
That's right. He's right.
I had fun with it. My biggest problems were that I was really into the first like 5 or whatever, and then once Cottonmouth went away, I thought it got really choppy. It took 2 episodes. Wait, he loses his powers, or he gets shot with the Judas bullet, which tunnels into his skin, and then so I thought he only had like impenetrable skin, but they made it sound like his whole innards were super strong.
Well, so the skin thing falls apart quickly, right. As we've learned in our podcast talking about powers. Like they had to be like, well, that doesn't make any sense.
It's all of his cells, which I thought
to get his powers back, and then meanwhile you know Diamondback's running around being cartoonish. That to me, it was the middle third was really rough.
He was dying for like 2 or 3 episodes,
right.
Or something.
Yep.
Limping around. The limping around the city in the bullet hole, like the bullet hole hoodie look got old very quickly. Which also, again, much like both seasons of Daredevil and now this, can we have another display of the superpowers without having the hero have to walk through a building and get attacked by 30 guys?
Nope.
Like they did it again. It was the same. Great scene in Daredevil season 1 that we loved when he was tired, remember, in the hallway, and that was great. And then they did it again in Daredevil, and then now they did it again when he broke into the building to get the safe, whatever, you know.
The point is, and who they're selling it to. I mean, this is what people want. This is the solo right after the second verse in every rock song ever.
It's also their trademark now. The first one got so much attention that they're doing it. They do it with every. It's fine.
But just get some creativity about it. Make it give it something to be unique and different as opposed to just the same thing. I don't know. The other thing I was gonna say was that I thought that I agree with you. The middle part was where it dragged the most, where it slogged the most. But what I thought was interesting about this was that the ending was really weird. I thought, and not in a bad way, but just basically, if you look at we had the big showdown with Diamondback. And that ended fairly quickly, and there was still a lot of show left to go. And you had a lot of kind of wrap up, like when he goes to the police and explains everything and explains it all out.
I love that because they were like, "You're good to go now. We're fine." And then the feds show up. Like the police were just ready to be like, "No, it's fine." And I was like, "I don't think it works that way."
You still threw the cop into the windshield. I don't care what your reasoning was. That still has to be dealt with.
Yeah. And then ostensibly, you know, Alfre Woodard gets away. Like the villain didn't get the loud, bombastic villain got dealt with, but the real villain of Mariah, she got off scot free. Like
that's the lesson in that, Ron.
Yeah, I know.
Always be the quiet guy in the background. But also, you know, they have to set these all up now for further seasons. I don't know that they knew with Daredevil they'd do more of these per hero. I mean, not just in general. And so now they have to sort of. It was very weird, but I kind of dug that it was weird.
Me too. Yeah, I liked it. I liked that it wasn't like every other one. Like, I thought the ending was unique enough to that because it was different.
I liked that Luke was always reading. I liked that it ended with him bonding with the marshal about the books he was reading.
Yep.
I thought that was a nice, I mean, that's a comics thing, but that's a nice touch to have run throughout the series.
Yep.
I think Luke is a great character. And yep. They really, he's a fantastic character on the show.
Agriculture really did a great job of bringing him to life. And like you believe, you know, like they sold the importance of Pops and the neighborhood and doing the right thing and all that, you know, and that sort of thing. And then I will say, like, you know, a lot of times I don't love flashbacks, you know, but we got the necessary flashback of Luke in prison with the worst wig and beard, fake beard ever.
No, it's great. I didn't know it was him. I was like, why are we, is this his father? And then after all, I was like, oh no, it's actually him.
Yeah.
Because Mums the Schemer was there, which was awesome.
Yeah. But then I really liked the flashbacks about Cottonmouth and Mariah because it gave them depth and understanding of where they came from and who they were. And that, and made it that much worse when Cottonmouth died, you know, because I'm like, oh, I really, really liked him.
I did too.
Yeah.
I also really liked the music.
I love the music.
The music was great, not just the performers in the club, but they were all fantastic, and that was one of the things I missed that went away halfway through, kind of, although it popped up a little bit once Mariah took over the club.
It came up at the end again, yeah, that band.
I also liked the use of the score. I know that some people grated on them, but to me it was the Blaxploitation tribute to have sort of a very prominent score behind some of the more... It didn't work all the time. There was one conversation, I think it was at the end when Luke was fighting Cottonmouth, when he tried to talk to him, tried to reason with him, they had a very prominent music behind him. I thought that didn't necessarily work, but for the most part I thought the music really worked on the show. And the performances, the club performances were awesome. All
uniformly. Well, I think that was the one thing that, like, when I was talking about it, was that separated this from the other, was made it different, that made it more interesting, was that it didn't feel like, and I'm guessing a big part of that was the sound. It did not sound like, because, you know, every other Marvel thing sounds like every other Marvel thing, and this one was different.
Yeah, it really had the identity of the neighborhood and of you know, like you felt like you were there the whole time for the right reasons, and it was I thought it worked. You know, I'm not a big hip hop fan, and I don't, you know, I couldn't tell you what the songs that were used, you know, what they were, but they didn't get in the way, which is the right thing to do.
It was good. It was I mean, I've really enjoyed all these, so when I can say this was the least good, I can. That doesn't mean it was terrible, because I have really liked all of them. But I look forward to more Luke Cage. I look forward to him maybe showing up in Iron Fist. I look forward to him in The Defenders. I look forward to hopefully another series of Luke Cage. More Michael Coulter as Luke Cage. I hope that Kevin Feige comes to his senses and says, okay, maybe we can have some of these guys appear in the movies, because they're too good not to, but probably won't happen. But
yeah.
It's too bad.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, I mean, like, and we've seen the teaser for Iron Fist, which I think looked fine. You know, like, I'm gonna watch it, and then I'll be excited to see what they do with the Defenders, and they put them all together, and you know, they've got a nice little thing going here with these Netflix shows. I just, you know, think that, you know, the 13 episode is too long again, and B, and we've talked about this and we rant on it, and it's just that I hate the drop them all at once. I would even go as far to say that I would swallow the 13 episodes a bit better if it was released weekly, you know, but the fact that you're watching them 3, 4, 5 at a time, because because the whole binge watching, you know,
people start yelling at you if you haven't. And I realize I've done that mockingly to Josh, but that's just me mocking him. But you know, like, this dropped and I had to immediately go on a work trip for a week. So I couldn't even touch. Yeah. I couldn't touch it for 7 days.
I think that it really, well, I think there's too much.
Oh, wait, Josh hasn't been here for this conversation, really.
No, he hasn't.
I haven't. I think it's too much for a couple of reasons. Like, that show comes out, and in terms of sort of social media or zeitgeist, or people sort of just talking about something while it's happening, people talk about it for about 5 days.
And then it stops.
Yeah. And those are the people who have time to watch 13 of them right away. And then it doesn't have a chance to hook you, because the next week, and it's not necessarily just Marvel, but like, I keep turning on Netflix, and like, there's a new show at least every week, and I just am like, at a certain,
there's too much.
That's their goal. Their goal is to have new content, a new series.
I know, but like,
it makes it too hard. But you're right. To me, the biggest head scratcher, and it's not Netflix's problem, they don't give a shit, is that it doesn't have a chance to build up in the zeitgeist. People talk about it for 10 days, and then they move on to whatever's next.
So it becomes really special. It's opening weekend mentality. Really, it becomes really special for a week tops, and then it goes away.
Just fades away. Yeah.
You know, and if you think about, because we sound like old people again, but you know, Star Wars is Star Wars because it was just there.
It built for
2 years,
right?
You know, And then that never happens again with this constant look over here, now look here, now look here, now look here. And to me, what's funny is that every week somebody reacts like it's Star Wars and then no one talks about it anymore. And so I get really, I get disinterested in stuff because I know that it's just the new shiny thing. And
it also becomes a contest of who can watch the most, the quickest.
And
it's not about enjoying it. It's about, well, I've already watched eight. Well, congratulations. I don't have eight free hours on Friday.
I think if they released it weekly, it would be something that keeps people talking, keeps people on edge, and the cliffhangers would be that much more cliffhangery.
Yeah.
And I don't think I would notice the problems with the pacing and with the, you know, not being as tight. That's just me, though.
No, I agree with you. I totally 100% agree with you. Yeah. I think I talked about last on one of our previous shows that you never would have had a show like The Jinx happen culturally if they'd all just put the episodes out together and we'd moved on after 2 days. It just it doesn't have a chance to build up interest. People don't get to talk about it, and then, you know, but that's the way of the world.
All right, so ratings.
We're rating? Do we rate these?
No, we don't rate these. No. Oh.
Are you going to stick with it?
It's enjoyable. It's got problems. I thought it was probably also the worst written, but that's another. I mean, that's subjective. But it's got a great cast who really sell it. So
I think if
you don't have this, I mean, this I'm looking at the list of Luke Cage, Misty Knight, Shades, Mariah, Claire, Bobby Fish. Yep. I mean, Cottonmouth. These are all fantastic actors. Yep. And they really sell it. They really sell it.
The cast was by far the strongest aspect of the show.
Yes.
And but I will say that I will thank them for having a less annoying, repetitive opening credit as the other shows.
I dug previously. The opening.
And I would really just like Netflix just to give me a skip credits button or something because,
It skips if there's no opening, if there's no cold open scene.
Right.
It skips,
yeah.
It skips credits.
They did that a couple of times, and it was mainly the episodes that ended with a cliffhanger where the next episode picked up.
Yeah.
But then you do go to another episode, and there it is. It's back again. Ugh. Well, so for all in all, I'm hearing mostly thumbs up with some complaints.
I enjoyed it enough that I didn't have nitpicks about it. I was like, it's fine. You know, it's good. It's fine.
Yeah. It was. My problems aside, I had a lot of fun watching it, and the cast is great. It's worth watching.
Yep. All right, cool. So that's going to wrap it up for Luke Cage. We hope the wait was worth it. And then we'll be back here in February for Iron Fist, right?
I believe it's around there, yeah.
Yeah, it's around February, yeah. So
neither confirm nor deny my presence at that.
Well, we'll see. All right, so in the meantime, go to ifanboy.com where you can comment on this podcast and you can tell people what you thought of Luke Cage, what you thought worked, what you thought didn't. We want to hear from you there. And you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. We often take those emails on our regular show, which you can hear every Sunday, comes out every Sunday, where we're talking about the latest in comics and other fun stuff. So until next time, I'm going to wish you a sweet Christmas, and I'm Ron.
I don't think that's the way you're supposed to use that.
You should have done it that way, though.
Yeah, I wish you a sweet Christmas, sir.
And then everybody just gets mad. That's not the right usage at all.
It's April.